All right, if you'll open your Bibles to Judges, the 16th chapter. And in your notebooks or your folders to page 33. Judges chapter 16 and page 33 in your handouts. You're welcome. Anybody else need a copy of the lesson sheet? Those who may be visiting or others, we're studying Old Testament stories that hopefully will help us build faith and greater appreciation for the way that the Lord wants us to live, trying as best we can throughout these Old Testament stories to make New Testament application, find passages in the New Testament that harmonize or correlate with what we learn in these very familiar stories. We're currently studying the story of Samson, which is Judges chapters 13 through 16. And this is where we got to on Wednesday night. We're talking about some of his behavior or his conduct, his choices as a grown man. We talked about his parents and their noble request when the angel visited Manoah's wife and all that exchange that took place. We certainly commended them for their request. Now, this is Samson's choices, his marriage of the Philistine. We talked about that, requested Philistine woman because she looked good to him, a very carnal reason to pick a wife or pick a spouse. His parents objected to that. We commended them for that also. So we make the application that we need to think the same thing along those lines with our children. But Samson apparently ignored his parents' objection, so he married her after all. He didn't marry her, but he sought to marry her. She was given to another man. Then in chapter 14, verses 5 through 9, the touching of the lion carcass, or he killed the lion, and then he scraped the honey out of the carcass of the lion and ate it. And we're questioning whether or not that was a somewhat of a violation of the Nazarite vow, or even, if not that, of the law. Leviticus 11, verse 27, talks about that there is to be no contact with the carcass of a dead animal, whether you're a Nazarite or not. That was a prohibition to all Hebrews. There's the passage in Leviticus 11. So, and also the fact that he didn't tell his parents implies something, I think, at least at the bare minimum. This is where we got to Wednesday night. The marriage feast itself, it was an actual drinking feast. The Bible does not say that Samson actually drank, but he hosted or gave the feast. And again, Nazarites were told to have complete abstinence from the grape or the vine, the fruit of the vine. And this certainly seems to be skirting the issue, even if he didn't drink itself. It's a very, very poor judgment on his part. So now we start in chapter 16, 1 through 3, his association with the Philistine harlot. And all we have in these three verses, it says in verse 1 that he went to Gaza and saw a harlot there and went into her. So he committed fornication, sexual immorality with a harlot or a prostitute. What about the kind of life that he's supposed to live as a Nazarite? We just picked one verse out of Numbers 6. This time it's verse 8, when again the law said those who are under the vow were to live a life that's holy to the Lord. Well, would you call this holy conduct? Absolutely not. This was not good. It's not right. Not acceptable. So again, we see a choice that's clearly not in harmony with what God wants him to do. Again, we just ask the question, is this acceptable behavior? Again, not just for a Nazarite, but for anybody, whether you're a Nazarite or not. All God's people are supposed to live above reproach and honorably and faithfully. And this certainly would not, I think, fall in that category. Now, the balance of the chapter deals with Delilah. And, of course, this may be the best known of Samson's life. When you hear the name Samson, you think of who else's name? Delilah. That's just what the mind goes to. Was Delilah a Philistine? I think she was. The Bible doesn't say that she was, but I think it strongly implies that she was. And all the encounters, interactions that Samson had with her. It says again that he loves another woman, and I think it's a Philistine woman. This is the point that I raised in the sermon last Sunday night. Something apparently was drawing Samson to these women. You'd think after two episodes of Philistine women, he'd had his fill. He'd had enough. But again, God's using him and his choices because God was seeking an occasion to battle against or to defeat the Philistines. They are the ones who are ruling over Israel at this time. They're the oppressing nation in this period of the judges. So God, I think, was using these choices providentially. Now we'll talk more about that just in a moment. Did God need Samson to fornicate with the Philistine harlot to seek an occasion against him? God didn't need a man to do that. Did God need Samson to fall in love or to somehow give his heart away to a Philistine woman to seek an occasion against the Philistines? No, he didn't need that to happen either. God could use Samson in a number of ways to war against and to defeat this oppressing nation. But we're emphasizing not so much that God used Samson, that's the truth, so we don't have to debate that. What we're talking about is Samson's choices, his conduct, be it moral or immoral, that we can make application of in our living today. So these actions were his choices. They were not the things that God was leading him to do. God wasn't making Samson go to the harlot. God wasn't making Samson marry the Philistine woman. Those were his choices. He'll use them nonetheless, but that's what we're emphasizing at this part of Samson's story. All right. Chapter 16 now, verse 5. We're introduced to Delilah, and as she kind of jumps into this story, somebody comes to her with a request. Who was it that came to Delilah? All right, the lords of the Philistines, the officials, the rulers, whoever they were. And what did they say to her, basically? Yeah, we're going to have to put an end to this Samson thing. So what was it that Samson had that they couldn't overcome? Well, he had this brute strength. And Samson was just a mighty man. I mean, he's just knocking people out right and left. So they know they can't contend with that, fair and square. So they tell Delilah. I know it doesn't say it in the text. I think what they're saying is use all the charms that you have as a woman. Okay, use that as leverage, and you somehow extract that secret from Samson. That way, then he'll become like the rest of us. And then we'll have numbers on our side and we can overwhelm them. We'll have the advantage. And what was the incentive? Did they just say, pretty please, and do it? No. What was the incentive for her to do this? Yeah, money. Yeah, we'll each pay you what? Now, it doesn't say that we'll pay you just as a collective group. Doesn't it say we'll each pay you? Yes, the end of verse 5. Then we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Wonder how many lords there were. Well, there's more than one, I know that. Could have been a lot of them. This could have been a substantial amount of money. So the fact that she's willing to do this, what's that tell you about her character? Well, it's not stellar. Some people will do anything for money, won't they? And that's even to this day. Some folks will do anything for money. Even some Christians will, quote, unquote, sell their soul for money. Jesus said in Matthew 16, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world? If you get all the money in the world, but to do that, you've got to forfeit or you lose your own soul. It's a bad trade, a bad deal. So we can see that kind of character. She doesn't have any character. So he begins to this interaction with her, and she asks him to tell her his secret. Verse 6, please tell me where your great strength is and how you may be bound to afflict you. Now, Samson's thinking straight. He knows this is the Philistine woman. At least I think she is, and I think he knew that too. So she's asking him that. Now, what possible good could come from him telling her this? You think of any good that could come from it? I don't think so either. Three separate occasions, what does Samson do? Does he tell her the truth? Does he lie? Let's call it what it is. He doesn't tell the truth. He seems to be, this is my phrase, he seems to just be toying with it. He's rather cavalier about this. Again, where did Samson get his strength? Was his strength part of the Nazarite vow? No, it's separate. The Nazarite vow was to give him moral character, moral strength to live that kind of life. This superhuman strength that he had was just another blessing from God to use in this battle against the Philistines. So it wasn't his. It wasn't like he worked out with weights and got it, you know, trained for X number of years. This was just the Spirit of the Lord coming on him mightily at certain occasions, and then he would use this for whatever purposes were at the present. So he tells her these three other reasons. Well, if they do this and if they do this, then I'll be like another man. And so she does it, and then she says, Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And what did he do those other three times? With whatever was binding him. Just snapped it like it was nothing. And so she could see that he's not being honest with her. At least down through verse 14, these three occasions. In fact, the last one of the three was getting closer to the truth, wasn't it? What was the last reason or the last answer he gave? Or what did it have to do with? His hair. And that's getting closer. Still wasn't the absolute truth because the hair wasn't cut or shaven. But at least he says, if they weave the seven locks of my hair, this is verse 13, with the web or the loom, if you will, and fasten it with a pin, then I'll be like everybody else. But that wasn't the truth either. So, when this question was asked, and if he's truly going to be faithful to God and maintain his moral purity, when she asked him that question, what things should he have said? Tell me, Samson, where you get your secret. What should he have said? I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm not. Do you think Samson knew that God was using him? Should he have known that? I think he should have known that. He's living this way. Although the Bible doesn't say this, I wonder if his parents ever told him when he was growing up, you know, we got this visit by an angel and they told us you're supposed to live this way. I would have thought that would have been communicated to him in some way in his training or teaching at home. And you're to live this kind of life, Samson. This isn't our idea. This is from the Lord. The Lord wants you to live this kind of way. And then when he got older, he got this additional blessing, this great strength. All right. So He just should have said, I'm not telling you anything. But he toys with him. He seems rather cavalier about all this. So Samson's strength is a blessing from God, and he appears to be somewhat flippant about this blessing. And that kind of response never brings anything good. It just doesn't. It only brings disaster. Now, let me pause right here. I didn't ask this in the lesson. You and I aren't going to be blessed in this way like Samson was, with great gargantuan strength to do whatever. But we do have blessings from God, don't we? We do. Can we be rather flippant about our blessings? Rather not serious about them? Kind of toy with the world about them in one way or another? We can do that too. And what's going to happen in those kinds of situations? What good can come from that? No good can come from that. Now, you may not wind up like Samson with your eyes gouged out and bound in fetters and chains somewhere. That may not happen to you. But somewhere along the line, there's going to be some disaster when we take that road. And so that's what we want to take away from this, at least this juncture of the lesson, is that we need to be very serious. If God has seen fit to bless us with something, then we need to be serious about that and use it in ways that He would approve of. And use it to serve Him and the cause of His kingdom, not to serve ourselves. And that's what Samson is doing here. I think we can see that. All right. Well, you have to give Delilah one thing. She was persistent. You got to give her that one. You may not agree with her morals. I don't either. But she was consistent. She was persistent. Verse 15 of chapter 16. Well, and verse 16. She says in verse 15, how can you say that you love me when your heart is not with me? Now, let's stop right there and ask this question. Delilah is castigating Samson. Your heart's not with me. You're not serious about this. You're just toying with me. Where was Delilah's heart? Was her heart with him? No. Where was her heart? She wants that money. That's where her heart is. She's wanting this reward promised her by the Philistine lords. And so she says, You have deceived me these three times and have not told me where your great strength is. Verse 16 is the clincher. What's recorded in verse 16? Day after day, just on him and on him and on him. And finally she broke him, didn't she? She finally got through to him. So I hate to use this word because she didn't have any conviction, but whose determination was the greatest here, Delilah's or Samson's? It was obviously hers. She got through to him. And he finally broke. And this is a corrupting influence. We borrow Paul's statement from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Do not be deceived. Don't be deceived about this. Evil companions or evil communication, some versions say, corrupt good morals. There's nothing wholesome about Delilah or what she's trying to do. It's entirely corrupting. And so, one thing that we as parents need to instill into our children, this would be the best way to apply this. We need to teach our children what kinds of things that this part of the story talks about and Paul emphasizes in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. What do our kids need to understand? All right. When you hang around people who don't act and think like you do and who don't have the same desires and goals that you do, somewhere along the line, what's going to happen? We can't tell you where, but somewhere along the line, you keep that communication line open. You keep that contact with that kind of person, and there's going to be some corrupting somewhere. And it's going to happen. They'll wear you down. They'll show more determination on what drives them versus what drives you. And that's the danger of that. And so we need to instill that into our children. And not just our children, what about us too? I mean, adults can fall prey to this same thing. It's just easier for our children to fall prey to it because they have not yet mastered the concept of making good choices and using good judgment. They're still learning that process, but by the time you get to be our age, we should know better. And sadly, sometimes we don't do any better than they do, and that's what's so sad about that. So Samson, he caves in here. So Samson's going to pay a huge price for this. It's going to cost him dearly. And as you know the story goes, it certainly does. All right. Samson, and to me this is the turning point. The first part of verse 19. He's told her his secret now. Well, that didn't entirely bring the disaster. Where did he agree to go? We use this figure of speech. He went to Delilah's lap. The Bible says that she laid his head on her knees. I take that to mean her lap. So it was some kind of a comforting thing for Samson, maybe even somewhat sensual. Verse 18, when she saw that he had told her all that was in his heart, excuse me, she sent and called for the Lord to the Philistines. And she says in verse 18, now she knows, he's told me, okay, I finally got the truth. So you come up here and you get ready to do this. Although it doesn't say in verse 18, it wouldn't surprise me if she also said, and don't forget to bring the money. That's what she's wanting anyway. Make sure you bring the money. You promised to bring the money, and I've delivered now, so you better pay me. So at the end of verse 18, they do bring the money, put it in her hands. Then she made him sleep on her knees or on her lap. Wonder what charms she used to get it to him to get to that sort of a relaxed state. Well, he fell for it and makes him go to sleep. And while he's sleeping, then they come in and they cut his hair. What is the saddest part of verse 20? The Lord had departed him and he didn't know it. And also look at verse 20. What does Samson think? Verse 20, she says, like before, Samson, Philistines are here. And he did what? Well, it's like all the other times. This is no big deal. Because we think we've been somewhere or done something before, we're going to think it's just going to keep going that way. My behavior notwithstanding. And that's not the case. Samson by this time had crossed the line, hadn't he? He had gone too far. He can't now rely on what happened in the past. Things are different now. It's changed. And so she goes in. Samson, the Philistines are here, and he rises up, but he had no brute strength. And verse 20 says, he did not know the Lord had departed him. Had Samson departed the Lord? I think you could say that. That's why God had departed him. The passage comes to mind in Romans 1. Three times in that text, Paul says that God gave them over, the ancient Gentiles, to their depraved lust or to the corrupting influences of their mind. Why does God eventually have to give man up? What's man done? He's given God up. And God will give man up if man gives God up. He will. He has no choice but to do that. God will leave us to the consequences of our choices. And that's what's happened here to Samson. So the Lord had departed him. Samson did not know it. This place, Delilah's lap, it could be very enchanting, very exciting. It could seem that way. But it's very dangerous. And having just compromised himself, he was now set up for destruction. The trap's been set, the bait's there, and Samson doesn't have a chance. He's going to get caught, at least through verse 21. We'll see that just in a moment. Anybody have a comment or question? You look rather insightful. Albert, you want to say something? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. God can have no fellowship with sin. He is light, and in Him is no darkness at all, John says in 1 John 1. And so God has no choice but to depart from Samson. You're right. Because of Samson's choices here to behave the way that he has. All right, that's a good observation. Okay, well, she chastised Samson for not loving her. Did she love him with her heart? Obviously, no. She wanted to get the money, and we've emphasized that. That's where her heart was. Samson's heart is with her, and her heart's there. So it just never was a good situation for Samson to be at this place. Danger was all over the place. And again, as parents, we tell our children, especially when they get to be in the teenage years and they're doing some of these adult-type activities, they're making adult-type decisions that they haven't had to make when they were little children. And we try to instill in them these values. You're going to have to use your head. You're going to have to think about these things. And you cannot go down these certain paths because destruction is surely there. And just don't do that. That's what we want them to finally understand. Can you still find Delilah's lap in the world today? It's still out there. Places that seem rather enchanting. It is not what it seems to be. It certainly is not. It is dangerous. It's not delightful. And it is deadly. Especially for who? For the naive. Because they don't know how to deal with that kind of thing yet. Inexperienced. And I did think of some passages from the Proverbs. Let's look at these real quickly. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but I think there's a great parallel here. Turn to the book of Proverbs. One is in chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5. We'll start in verse 1. The counsel of the father, the instruction of the father. My son, give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion, and your lips may reserve knowledge. Now verse 3, who does the father get right into talking about? What kind of person? A strange woman, the adulteress, a woman of the world. This is a Delilah, all right? Father says, the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. See, that's Delilah's lap. It looks enchanting. It looks good. But it is not what it seems. Verse 4. But in the end, what is she? It's not honey. What is it? Bitter like wormwood. sharp as a two-edged sword. Verse 5, where do her feet go? To death. See, it's a way to destruction. Her steps lay hold of Sheol. Look at verse 8, same chapter. Keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest strangers be filled with your strength and your hard-earned goods go to the house of an alien. You see, there's consequences for doing this. You'll lose all that's yours to someone else. Verse 11, you groan at your latter end when your flesh and your body are consumed. Chapter 7 of Proverbs. And we won't read this. This is too lengthy, but this is another familiar passage. This is about the harlot or the adulterous woman. And again, it's instructions from the father to the son. Again, verse 1. My son, keep my words and treasure my commandments within you. Now, verses 5 through 27 all go together. But basically, as you know the text, again, the father's saying, do not go near the adulterous woman. Let's jump in here in verse 9. In the twilight, in the evening, in the middle of the night, in the darkness, there behold, a woman comes to meet him, that is the naive one, dressed as a harlot, cunning of heart, boisterous and rebellious, her feet do not remain at home. She's in the streets. Verse 13, she seizes one, kisses him, with a brazen face she says to him, this is her words now, verses 14 through 20. She has a husband, but where is he, basically? He's not at home, so what's she going to do? She's going to play around a little bit. And see, she makes it sound so exciting, makes it sound so appealing, very enchanting. Could be a wonderful kind of experience. But verse 22, after he's been enticed in verse 21 and seduced, he goes after her, but what is he in verse 22, the one who falls for this line? What's the wise man liking him to? That's led to slaughter. See, he's going to destruction. This is deadly. An arrow will pierce through his liver, and as a bird hastens to the snare, so he does not know that it will cost him his life. And so, again, you see this kind of instruction. And this is what we need to be busy teaching our children. And I think Samson's episode here gives us an example of how destructive this kind of tragedy is. And as parents, you know, we all love our children, and we have invested a lot in them, and we don't want to raise them and to mentor them and to provide for them only to see eventually what happened, that they come to such a pitiful end like this. We just don't want that for them. And so we need to be busy teaching our children at what point in their life? When they reach the teenage years? Was that when you start? What if you've waited to start then? It's too late. You've missed it. Time is gone. We need to teach them when they're younger. And hopefully instill these values in them that they may heed our wise advice. Yes, Justin. Verse 4, what chapter, Justin? Chapter 4 and verse 14. Yes. Well, okay. I think that's a good question. Now, Justin's question is, how can we know for certain that this isn't of God? Because of chapter 14 and verse 4. And we talked about that some, and he mentions as a parallel, Hosea was told to marry a harlot. There's even some difference as to whether Gomer was a harlot already when he married her. I don't think she was. I think she was his wife and she became a harlot. But now some would disagree with me on that, and that's fine. But let's stick with the Samson story. Again, I'm just asking, would God tell someone whom He sent an angel to tell the child's parents, I want the boy to live this way, this is what I want his morals to be, what I want his conduct to be, would God then directly lead such a one into these kinds of situations? How would you answer that? I have a problem with that. I don't see the Lord doing that. God still used Samson? Yes, He did. But there's more to Samson than his brute strength. I mean, when we read the story of Samson, we think about, oh, he's just a strong guy, and he was just, you know, whipping the Philistines right and left. But there was more to him than his strength. And I think even more important than his strength was his should have been his moral strength. He was to live a certain kind of life. And to live that kind of life, can he do that and go into a Philistine harlot? Can he do that and host or give a drinking feast? Can he do that and go to a situation like Delilah's house and be enticed to her lap and not come out unscathed or unburned? That's my question. So, you may have a different idea about that. I'd like to hear anybody's got a comment about that. I think that's something that's worthy to think about. But I just can't harmonize the two, that God would want him to live this way, and then He would lead him and well, force is not the right word, but make it so that he would live that kind of life. I just can't harmonize those two. Anybody have a comment? A question? Differing opinion? Albert? Yes. Yes. Right. When you're dealing with the providence of God, that is such a deep subject. We cannot see all the way into that. Our minds just can't comprehend all that. But how God can use us when we choose the good and the right way to accomplish His purpose, and how God can use us if we just really mess it up and choose the bad, but He can still use us to accomplish His purpose. Only God can do that. Now, how He can work that out, I can't answer that for you. That's deep water. But I just think it's God working His will out, but Samson's making these choices, and God will use them to serve His purpose. Is it another? Samson's bad choices did not thwart the plan of God. That is correct. And at the end of the class, I mean, he gets listed in Hebrews 11. I understand that. He is. So, did he totally abandon his faith? Well, it doesn't seem that he did. At least at the last of his life in chapter 16, he seems to have repented somewhat and he's seeking God's favor again. Maybe that's the occasion in which the Hebrew writer is mentioning Samson, how he shut the mouths of lions. Well, Brother Miller, I think that's a good question. Did God give Samson his strength back so that he could destroy the Philistines in that last episode? Well, I can't say that he didn't. It seems like that he allowed that to happen, to kill more in that one moment than he had all his entire lifetime. The Bible does say that. All right. Anybody else have a... No. Yes. Yes. The hair was just a symbol of the Nazarite vow. The strength was from God. The fact his hair grew back, I think, was just a part that the Philistines neglected to observe. They should have cut it again, if that's what they thought the strength was. Keep him, you know, keep him shaven. But he did pray for strength, and God did answer him. So that must mean something. Yes, Justin. Yes. And Hebrews 11 does say that. You are correct. But I'm talking about these choices he's making before all that took place. And I'm not trying to if you'll pardon the expression, to beat up on Samson. I'm not trying to do that. But I'm trying to portray him, I think, realistically as he is. And to me, you know, even those that choose wickedly or choose immorally, they still serve as examples. We need to learn from them so that we don't repeat those mistakes. You can read 1 Corinthians 10, and that's the very point that Paul makes about Israel and all the bad choices that she made. And he said, some of them did this, and don't do that, and don't do as some of them did here on this occasion. So the wrong choices can still serve as an example to us, and I think that's how we're going to use Samson. Anybody else? Comment or question? Yes, Bill. I don't know how old Samson was. The Bible doesn't tell us. I don't think we can determine how old he was. I mean, he's a man, obviously, but I don't know how old he was. Okay. Modern equivalents. I've asked, where can we find Delilah's lap? Well, sex is there. That's Delilah's lap. Certain associations of friendships. If we get involved in certain kinds of business deals that may, at the end of it, require us or ask of us to compromise our convictions, what is that? That's Delilah's lap. We need to stay away from those kinds of situations because they're corrupting. No good can come from that at all. And we need to understand that. Okay. The once mighty Samson is now abused. He's even scarred for life. He's humiliated. How was he physically scarred for life? What did they do to him? Gouged his eyes out. Now that's just a horrendous thought. But they took him right out. Now he's a beaten man. He no longer is a faithful Nazarite. He's given that up. That's been abandoned. And I'm even suggesting on more than one occasion, not just having his hair shaven or cut off, but the other situation that led up to this. I'm saying all these were steps that kept leading him in a place that he did not need to go that would bring about his eventual demise. That's where he is now. He's captured. His hair does begin to grow back. Is this repentance? Some say, well, that's Samson repented. I'm not sure that you can prove that from the text. I think that might just be a Philistine neglect. They just didn't notice that his hair kept growing back. But it did grow. And so now he's going to be the sideshow or the clown. They're going to use him as an amusement. But before we look at the last part of this chapter, look where Samson is and compare where he is now. To go back to chapter 13 and his parents' dream and their questions, their requests of the angel. They prayed for and hoped for great things from Samson. Has it turned out that he is the man that was talked about in chapter 13? He's not the man. He's not anything like what the plans were. It's not what God desired of him. He's only a shadow of what he could have been. He's certainly not what his parents had requested and prayed for. And we talked about their noble requests and how parents need to have those kinds of thoughts even before they have children. Remember, they asked the angel, to, in essence asking the Lord, teach us what we may do to help the boy. I didn't say that exactly right. Chapter 13, verse 8. Teach us what to do for the boy who is to be born. Teach us. What do we need to do to raise this child in the way that you want him to be? So such a noble request where he is now, he's miles, he's eons and eons away from that. And that's what the tragedy is with Samson's story. So the end of his life now, chapter 16, 23 through 30. Philistines had a party. Who all's there? Well, how many's there? At least how many, we know. 3,000, because where were they? They're on the roof. But there was others inside the house. And so the house is full of the Philistines. They're having a feast. Now, what's the occasion for the feast? Why the party? They got Samson. And who were they thanking? They're thanking their god Dagon. They're offering praise to him. It's a feast. It's a party. Dagon has delivered our enemy Samson to us. And so they're having a high old time. And chapter 16, it says in verse 25, it happened when they were high in spirits. What's that mean? when they were drunk, when they were inebriated, that they said what? We have a good idea. What should we do? Bring in the clown. Send the clown in here that he may amuse us. Let's have fun with Samson. Make him do some tricks. This mighty man that has been our enemy. And up till now, what has Samson been doing in Philistine captivity? Grinding like an animal. That's what you hook the oxen up for. And here's this man. He's been deposed and degraded to this low estate. Just tragic. So Dagon was being praised for delivering Samson. They demanded the blind Samson be brought in for entertainment. Verse 25. That's what the Bible says. House is full of lords and officials. At least 3,000 are on the roof, verse 27. So Samson has to be led in by a boy, a servant boy. And he is placed, you'll see there in verse 25 at the end, they placed him between two pillars. What did Samson request of the boy? Yeah, let me lean. I mean, you can see the boy would say, well, I need to let you have something. You can't see, poor thing. Let me go between the pillars, put my hands here so that I may lean or rest myself just for support, if you will. Our time is, I think, essentially gone. We're going to have to finish this Wednesday night. We will conclude the story of Samson, lesson 15, and then also go ahead and start lesson 16, which is the story of David and Goliath, 1 Samuel 17. So thank you for your good comments and good questions this morning, and we'll pause right there before worship begins in a few moments.